Go the executive branch. We talked about the governor.
Morning.
We talked about the lieutenant governor. We talked about the governor's council. Now we just got to deal with the other offices, and then we'll go on to the judiciary branch. All right. So, among the elected officers that are elected coterminously, which means at the same time as the governor, due to all of those amendments, so every 4 years, first up, we have the Secretary of the Commonwealth. The Secretary of the Commonwealth, the Secretary of State, sometimes referred to as, is one of the most important members of the executive branch because the Secretary's office is the keeper of the records. Everything, not only copies of department reports, not only election returns and ballots. They do it for every single city and town in the Commonwealth. They keep records of every appointment made by the governor, every original statute passed by the general court, everything, birth records, death records, incorporations for businesses, charters, census, all of the data is kept by the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office. They also are the ones who make sure all of the MGLs are publicized on the website, so you have the ability to look at all of the laws that are on the book for open and transparency sakes. All right. Now, this is an elected office. They serve a 4-year term, again, coterminously with the governor. And we covered it. They are the second in line. They're behind the lieutenant governor if there's a vacancy. Now, the secretary, as the highest ranking official in their department, they are the ones responsible for doing all of the appointments of all of the personnel and staff that work in the secretary's office. So they are not appointed by the governor. William Galvin, who's been like Secretary of the Commonwealth for as long as I can remember, definitely more than 20 years. He does all the hiring and appointments. The only qualification to serve as Secretary of the Commonwealth is...
you have to be a resident.
You just have to live here. And...
have a heartbeat.
You have to have a pulse. You have to be alive. You cannot be dead. Excellent. Questions on that position? The next constitutional officer is the Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The Attorney General is the Chief Legal Officer, and it is the Attorney General's job to represent the Commonwealth in all litigation involving the state or the state officers. So the Attorney General would be their lawyer. Now, truth be told, the Attorney General's don't go into the courtrooms. What they usually do is they send in the assistant attorney generals to do the courtroom activity. They are third in line in succession for the governor. They are elected for 4-year terms that are coterminous with the governor. So every 4 years during the midterm election, not the presidential election year. There are, interestingly enough, two qualifications.
One,
you have to be a resident in the state of Massachusetts.
You have to live in Massachusetts.
Is it the heartbeat thing?
No. Well, kind of. But I'm gonna stitch that in with living in Massachusetts. Anyone have any idea what the other one is?
You have to be a legal resident for 7 years.
Nope.
Okay. Do you have to be a certain age?
Nope.
You have to have an ID.
No.
You have a library card.
No. You have to have one of these.
I don't know what that is.
You have to be registered.
Nope.
You have to have a medical Massachusetts Board of Bar judicial Overseas court, of the Supreme Judicial Court.
You have to be a licensed attorney.
Oh, attorney. Yeah, I was literally thinking that.
I just said the whole thing.
Yes, in order to be the Attorney General, you have to be bar certified. You have to be a member of the Massachusetts Bar. You have to go to law school, and in Massachusetts, to sit for the bar exam, you have to go to a law school that's recognized by the state, and then you have to pass that damn test.
What if you just work at a bar, like a bartender?
No, it's not quite.
I don't think that works.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work.
No. Yeah, good try, though. Good try. All right, so you have to live in, you have to reside in Massachusetts, and you have to be an attorney. Why? Well, the Constitution requires the Attorney General to provide legal advice to the state officers, whether they're the elected officers or the appointed officers. And this could be anything administrative related to state or local operations. The AG also has to review all statutes for their constitutionality. So any law, in theory, that gets passed by the general court has to go to the AG's office before the governor signs it.
Any law,
if requested. Now, like the Secretary of State's office, the Attorney General does all the appointments in the AG's department. So all of the Assistant Attorney Generals, all of the secretaries, all of the staff are all hired by the Attorney General. They're not appointed by the governor. Question? Next up, Treasurer and Receiver General. The Treasurer and Receiver General. Sometimes just called the Secretary of the Treasury, but their technical title in the Constitution, Treasurer and Receiver General. Their job is also kind of important. All of the money goes to the Treasurer and Receiver's office. They receive all of the money, they make all the payments, they do all the investments. He is the I don't even know who we have for state treasurer currently. So we'll say he or she is the only state officer that's authorized to take money out of the state's accounts. So the governor, even though she is technically the head of the executive branch, and they're supposed to make sure all our bills are paid, the signature on the check is the treasurer's. The treasurer's office also supervises the money collections by your cities and towns. So, when we collect property taxes, when we collect excise taxes, it all has to be reported and then sent to the treasurer's office for documentation. Again, like I said, it really doesn't make sense, but in theory, the towns are not supposed to run deficits. The towns are required by law to have balanced budgets. Well, one of the ways that this is overseen is that every penny that comes into the town gets reported. Even the late fees, if you bring back a library book late, it all gets reported. The treasurer's office also oversees the Massachusetts lottery, which now includes oversight over the licensed casinos that are in Massachusetts. I think that's enough. They are elected coterminously with the governor. The only requirement is you have to live in the state. You don't even have to be like a CPA.
You have to be alive. Like
well, yeah, you have to live in the state.
Can't be dead in the state.
Yeah, you can't be dead in the state. Well, you can be dead in the state, but if you do, you can't be treasurer.
Yes.
That's kind of a disqualification. Just saying.
Noted.
Lastly, fourth in line for governor succession. Questions on any of these three before I give you the last one? Yes.
And then Secretary of Commonwealth, that's second.
Fourth.
I wonder the terms for all of them.
Hmm?
How long do they serve for?
Four. And we don't have term limits, by the way, in Massachusetts.
They can keep going.
But it's coterminous with the governor. So whenever the governor's up for election, all of these offices are as well. Which, again, is the midterm year. So we have our congressional elections every 2 years. The entire national, congressional House of Representatives goes up for re-election. Well, this is the 4 year when the president's up, but our gubernatorial and our executive offices are elected 2 years from now. So that midterm, in between.
Yeah, but in New Hampshire, though, it's every 2 years, though. It's every 2 years up in New Hampshire, though. I believe it's up in New Hampshire. They do it, like, every 2 years for the gubernatorial election.
Yes, you're right. They do. And they do have term limits in New Hampshire. That's the reason why Sununu is not running again.
Who? Sununu, he's the
governor. Yeah, the current governor of
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. All right. Last but not least, the auditor. Dum, dum, dum. If you voted and you answer the ballot questions, what the auditor does is involved in question one. The job of the auditor is to audit all of the agencies and departments within the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, including the general court. Her job is to make sure the books are open, honest, and accurate. They need to make sure that every penny comes in is documented and every payment out is documented. That all of the bills get paid in due time. They also have the responsibility of reviewing each payment to make sure the payments are legal. Fifth in line, elected coterminously. The only requirement is that you live in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Yes?
This is just like an opinion question, but what do you think would be illegal if all of our books were like shown to the public? What do you think they have been doing?
They have been, I'm guessing, spending monies in ways that don't comply with statutes. So, let's say there could be like an exorbitant amount of overtime that's getting paid, but it's not documented.
Right. Oh, okay. Which is why. Okay.
Yeah. So, by law, if you get overtime, it has to be recorded properly. Now, why would you do that? Well, maybe you got a buddy. And you're an elected official, and you want to get him a job.
Okay.
By the way, back in the day when the turnpike had tolls, every single person that was collecting money in the tolls was somebody's connection. You get a job where you get paid, at the time it was like twice the minimum wage, to sit and just watch people throw coins in a bucket.
Plus they can get paid more.
Yeah.
Without any sort of repercussions.
Maybe payments were made for companies that were not solicited properly. In Massachusetts, there's a whole section of the general laws, chapter 30, that sets all of the laws on how you solicit a company to do government contracts. You know, maybe they hired a company. Could be something as mundane as cleaning services that were not properly vetted, you know? And ultimately, all the general court shows is how much money they spend, but they don't show exactly where the money goes. So I am in favor of that question because I just believe in transparency. I mean, at the end of the day, if it's all above board, who cares? But I would like to see it.
Oh, yeah.
That's all. All right, any other questions on these? All right, well, see, like I said, if I had like 10 more minutes, I could have gotten to done last class, but we ran out of time and I did not want to keep you late.
Are we going to watch a movie now?
No.
Aww. Election.
You can watch a movie all you want at 12:15.
Professor Schooltown Rock.
Go on to Tubi. They don't have any state and local government movies. Trust me, I know. They did, we watch them. All right, let's move on to the third branch of government. As established by the Constitution of not only the Commonwealth, but the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of all the states. The judiciary. The judiciary is tasked with following a process that is older than our country. The procedures of our court systems are based on the common law practices that originate from the mother country, England. And they date back to 1066, the Norman conquest. Anybody know what I'm talking about?
Nope.
All right, in 1066, there was a dispute over the throne of England between somebody who was a friend of the prior king and a distant cousin of the prior king. All of the Anglo-Saxons rallied around the friend of the former king, but the distant cousin, who was the Duke of Normandy, who was a descendant of the Vikings, decided his claim was more significant. So he took an army of Norman soldiers from France, crossed the English Channel, invaded England, fought a battle, the Battle of Hastings, and cut off the king's head. Took the crown off of his bloody skull and crowned himself King of England.
This was, they killed the friend?
Yes. So at that point, the Normans conquered England. Well, in order to make sure that the government worked properly, the king began sending out agents and went to all of the towns where there were judges. And to make sure that the king's law was what was being applied, as opposed to the old Anglo-Saxon law, these agents literally talked to people in the town. What was your case? What was the ruling? And they would make a determination whether the judge could keep his job or not. Because if you're not following the king's law, whack, out you go. Over the next several kings, more and more steps were put in place to make sure that you had standard application of law that was applied in common everywhere around the realm. By the third Norman king, Henry II, they started requiring all the judges to write down their decisions. So everything is documented. And last time that happened, I got whacked in the head.
I remember that. I had nightmares about that for a week.
Yeah, me too. He and I was not even concussed, which is amazing. But anyways, so all of the decisions had to be documented, collected, so thus they could be reviewed. Well, what judges started doing is saying, okay, let's look. We make a decision based on the law and the situation at hand, and we're going to make a ruling. Well, this started essentially being another aspect of the law. So you had the laws that were passed by the crown, and then you had the laws that were made by the courts. So, for instance, murder. Murder is a common law crime that was created by the judges in England, where it requires you have to have mens rea, you have to have the evil mind, you must mean to do what you want to do, and you have to engage in actus reus, which is the murderous act. The only way you can be convicted is if it can be shown that you do both. Well, that's a law that was made by a judge. So, this allowed, again, this is why it's called common law. Because no matter where in England you were, if you did something that was the same as anyone else, no matter where it was or who you were or when it was, you would get the same basic decision, the same outcome. It allowed for standardization. Well, as time went on, judges would start looking back in time to see if they could find similar disputes, and they would use those precedents to make decisions in the day. Well, this is formally known as stare decisis. Stare decisis, which loosely means to stand by decisions. So the idea is you have consistency. You have predictability. So that way everyone in society will know, generally speaking, what they can expect if something happens to them. Well, our framers were, most of them were lawyers trained in the English system. So when they created our judicial system over here, they didn't do anything because it was already in place. They just got rid of the British judges and brought in American judges. And the process that we have today in 2024 is practically identical to what it was at the creation of our state and our country. So what does this mean? Well, simple. If you go in court today and you have a case, the judge is going to look at cases that occurred before and see if he or she can find parallels, and that's what they're going to base their decision on. Because the more times change, the more it stays the same. We are no more intelligent than people were 1,500 years ago. We all did the same stupid stuff that they did, and we still do it today. So how do you have consistency? Well, if you do something wrong, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter when you did it, this is what's potentially going to happen. So if you murder somebody, you know you're going to go to prison. You're not going to get a parade. All right, questions on that? All right, so where do the judges look to? Well, in Massachusetts, there are several areas where they look. The ultimate source are the constitutions, be it U.S. or the state constitutions. Nothing can be legal if it violates the Constitution. Nothing. So, if the government wants to come in and pass a law that says you cannot wear baseball hats anymore, well, that law is going to be challenged in the courts, and I can guarantee you it would get thrown out on constitutional grounds, because where in any constitution does it say the government has the right to regulate headwear?
It doesn't even say in the U.S. Constitution, so why would they even bother?
Because we have stupid politicians that may do stupid things. Not only do the courts look to the constitutions, they also look to common law. When you go to law school, if you ever decide to go to law school, most of the education you receive are based on these common law principles. You learn about decisions by the courts going back hundreds of years. And you look at the court's reasoning and you use that, you know, to figure out the outcomes or at least understand the outcomes. Well, generally speaking, judges are not supposed to make shit up. I mean, they do. They do at times, but they're not supposed to. Because chances are there's going to be rules that are in place that deal with anything that could potentially arise. Defamation, a negligence, infliction of emotional distress, assault, battery, you name it. There was a case that involved that and a decision was made. So not only do you look for the law that was created, you also look at, you know, what was going on in the case. You look at the facts. You see if they're in common. Because I don't care what year it is. If you have a structure and you invite people in and they come in and they fall through the floor, does it matter if it's a 1900-year-old mud hut or a modern concrete building that was built in 2027? The same thing happened. You didn't make it safe for people. You invited people in. Thus, you would be responsible for what happened to them. Complete tangent. Back in 1890, there was a case that was decided, I think it was in Michigan, if I remember correctly, about a cow named Rose. This set significant precedent. So long story short, you had a farmer that had a cow that would not get pregnant. So he determined that she, Rose, was useless. So she was going to, well, the owner was going to sell Rose to the company that makes Canadian, one of the Canadian whiskeys, I don't remember what it was, just so that way they would go, they would graze, and they would poop, you know, and use the fertilization to help grow the wheat and the barley and all that stuff. Well, lo and behold, they shook their hands, and they made a gentleman's deal, and on the day that the owner of the whiskey company was coming to pick up the cow, the farmer realized that the cow was in fact pregnant. So he refused to sell because the conditions had changed. When they shook the hands, they both mutually thought the cow had less value because it was barren. Well, if now the cow can get pregnant, that quadruples the value of the cow. Well, they sued in court. Who do you think the court sided with?
Who sued? The people who tried to buy the cow?
The buyer and the, well, the buyer sued the seller because the buyer claimed that, well, they were trying to get a sweetheart deal. They were now trying to get a cow that was not only worth way more than it was when they negotiated the price, but they were potentially going to get two cows out of the deal.
So they sided with the seller.
Do you think the court sided with the seller? Why?
Because they technically only made a verbal agreement. They only shook hands.
That's true.
So I don't know how that would follow through.
Is that one of the types of, well, here's the thing. Now I'm going to push beyond your knowledge. Right. Is that one of the type of contracts that has to be in writing?
Yes.
No, it's not.
No.
Sale of goods, $500 or more, has to be in writing. Not a cow that was sold for like $20.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay.
Well, I was going to say, like, if you were selling someone a car that, like, didn't run, and then, like, the day you're going to sell it just, like, started running again, and you're like, hey, listen, like, this car runs, I'm going to sell it for more, something like that.
Well, that would be an analogy, but would you be bound to sell it at the price you negotiated because at the time you shook hands, you didn't think it worked?
I mean, yes, you would be.
No, you wouldn't be, because the value is different.
But that's not, the value was different at the time when you were selling it. It's like, you know, when a law, like, if something was legal beforehand, but then became legal.
What's the point of sale? Is the point of sale when you shake your hands, or is the point of sale when you make that transaction? Money for keys.
Yeah, I think it's the exchange of.
I don't see
Okay. So who wins this case? Is it the seller who's selling the cow, or is it the buyer who's trying to buy the cow? How many people think it's the seller? How many people think it's the buyer?
I think it's the buyer.
Well, as it turns out, it was the seller. Because the basis of the sale had material changed. That case decision made in the 1880s is identical to the hypothetical that you said. So if you were to go in court and you sold the car, you shook a hand, you thought it didn't work, but on the day you got it started, not the other person, you could get out of the deal. Because the circumstances had changed. Well, you know when that principle was decided? At a case involving horses back in 1378.
Oh, wow.
So they were at a similar case to that? Football with horses?
It was horses, not a cow. Not a car.
It's like apples and oranges.
It is, but it's the same outcome, is it not?
Yes, it is.
That's the brilliance of our common law system. All right, the fourth area where judges have to look at, they have to see if there are any statutes in place. Has the legislature passed laws that have to be enforced? But of course, the statutes cannot violate the Constitution. But statutes do not have to adhere to common law. Statutes only have to follow the Constitution. So, I'm trying to think of an example. Alright, so under the common law, assault is the imminent fear of harmful touching. So assault is that oh shit moment when you see someone clench a fist and you see the fist coming at you. That's the assault. In Massachusetts statute, assault also includes not just the oh shit moment, but it includes a potential battery as well, the harmful touching. So it combines two common law principles, where under the common law they would be separate.
So you touching his shoulder would be considered assault?
That would be considered under state law assault. Assault and battery, yeah. Because he's got
to.
Right.
Oh, but like he has to be like scared of it.
Right.
So like if I went to go like shake your hand and you like gasped for air.
That would be an assault.
That's insane. I guess.
But here's the thing, could you sue me for that?
Probably not. Probably wouldn't
apply. No, because you have to show provable damages.
Unless it like tripped your hand too hard or something.
Could you show that as provable damages?
Like my fingerprint on your hand, that's a little purple.
Yeah, but how could I show that?
Show them your hand.
You think by the time I get to court, my hand's still going to be purple?
Yeah, I'm pretty strong, man.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to find out?
I do. Actually,
all right. Here's another, yes?
Not to push us back, but I want a little clarification of the common law case law. So,
common law are the rules. Mm-hmm. The different rules of the law, the elements. Case law are decisions based on the circumstances. So, the common law rule for contracts is one thing, but how is that rule applied to a set of circumstances? That would be case law. Because sometimes judges in case law make exceptions to common law rules.
What about statutes?
Statutes are passed by the general court, the legislative branch. So in Massachusetts, that's the MGL. The federal level, that's the U.S. code. Yes?
One last one.
Yeah.
So, when would a statute be used and when would a case law be followed?
Depends on the circumstances that involves the dispute that's in court. So, if you had a tree and it fell in my yard and crushed my shed, how am I going to try suing you? Am I going to make a common law tort claim? Or am I going to look for something that exists in Massachusetts statute?
Probably the latter.
By the way, there's nothing that would allow you to sue your neighbor if a tree fell in your yard under Massachusetts statute.
Really?
Because it's seen as an act of God. So you would have to do the common law route. You'd have to sue for negligence. claiming that the neighbor knew that the tree was rotted.
But how do you prove that he knew?
I know. How do you prove that he knew? That's the challenge.
Girl, like, put in his diary.
If you could get evidence of it.
That's awesome. Not going to have any diary
room. All right. Moving on. Any other questions before we move on? All right. The next principle that's applicable in our American court system, and this is huge. These four words are literally carved into the header of the U.S. Supreme Court building. You are to receive equal justice under the law. Meaning, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from, no matter what religion you are, what gender you are, how much money you have in the bank, doesn't matter. You have the right to get equal justice under the law. Now, here is the most challenging aspect of this. And we're going to have to move away from our attitudes of being young people and put on our adult thinking caps. Does justice mean you win?
No.
No.
What does justice mean?
It means the right thing was done. The outcome was satisfactory.
No.
So you're saying it's only justice if you win. No. If it's satisfactory, that means I'm happy with the outcome.
The outcome was just.
What does that mean?
It means it was...
You go. You get the mic.
I don't have it anymore.
You do.
She passed the mic, Papa.
Be that way. Okay, what? What do you got?
Did you ever see The Dark Knight?
No. Oh, answer my question.
No. This is part of the question.
I'm not talking about the Dark Knight.
With either the defendant or the...
You got to bring in Batman to everything. which one?
The Dark Knight.
Which one? Which bad guy was that one?
That was the Joker.
That was an excellent movie.
It's a great
movie. That was the best one of them all.
It is the best one of them all. It's one of the best movies ever made. It's one of the best superhero movies ever made.
I agree with you 100%.
Anyways. At the end of the movie, right, and spoilers to people, Batman had to become the villain because, he eliminated the Joker, right, fell off a building. And at the end of the movie, all the cops were after Batman, right?
Two-Face, corny.
Exactly. They were all after Batman because they thought he was the one that was causing all those problems. So at the end of the movie, Commissioner Gordon was like, oh, he's doing the right thing by, putting all the blame on him. And at the end of the day, that was justice. Was Batman satisfied that... He was taking it off of Two-Face's. He was making it seem like
Harvey Dent.
Yes, Harvey Dent died and was still the White Knight of the city, but didn't want to show that he was actually a villain. So we put all that blame onto Batman, right? And so he became the villain. Well, Harvey Dent was still a person they could idealize and be like, man, that person was awesome. Let's aspire to be that guy. So he did the greater good by taking all the blame on himself, which ended up being justice because he took all the blame on himself, and was he satisfied? No, he wasn't.
But is that just in the sense of it being fair?
It's not fair.
So that's not just that.
All right, still gonna
but just,
so what, hold on.
I
what
don't
was the
know.
Question?
What is justice?
Fairness.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be impartial. Like, it shouldn't be that. You shouldn't do favoritism or.
So it should be impartial.
Yeah, it should be impartial. Right. Like, you should treat me based on the circumstances like a reasonable person would treat anyone. Yeah, it shouldn't be like discrimination. Yeah.
But what if you lose?
What if I lose? It doesn't mean that you didn't. It means that my case was not sound.
There you go. You have to have the right to walk in the building. You have to have the right to present your case. You have to have a right to be listened to be heard, to present your witnesses, to present your evidence.
But you don't have the right to win.
But that doesn't mean you have a right to win. 100%.
We can all be winners.
Remember the image of what justice is represented in our system. Lady Justice is blindfolded. That basically means she casts no dispersion. She does not view anyone any differently. She holds the scales to ensure that no matter who you are, as long as you're treated fairly, the scales have to be balanced. But of course, if the scales tilt against you, she also wields a sword. Because justice involves someone wins, someone loses. So long as you have your day in court, it's not outcome determinative. Questions? And this is also something you have to remember. You don't go to court to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Hell no. You go to court and you're involved in an epic battle. Your side versus their side. It is adversarial as you can get. It is essentially a zero-sum game. There is a winner. There is a loser. Yes. Adversarial.
Yeah, what does that mean?
We're adversaries. We're not friends. We
enemies?
Hate one another.
That's so, not a nice profession.
Like enemies?
Enemies, yes.
What could they hate?
Hey, I don't care. If you're suing me, I hate you and I want to destroy you.
So real.
But you can only feel that in the courtroom, like if you leave and like punch the guy and be like, ah, I beat you and like, you know.
Well, then what would happen if there is a just system?
They could they walk back and be like, dude, that guy just punched me. Look at the mark on my face.
Exactly. Then what happens to that guy? Then he'll go away and have to suffer the consequences. No one in our system can be alleviated from the consequences of their actions. That's part of justice. If you do something wrong, you have to get punished. Every single case dispute involves two parties. If it's a civil case, you're suing for money. You have the person who is suing. They're called the plaintiff. And then you have the person who's being sued. They're called the defendant. If it's a criminal case, you have the government who's prosecuting the case. And then you have the defendant who is being prosecuted, potentially. There are always at least two sides. There can be more, but we're not going to go down that route. That's too confusing. In our system, it's not the government that makes the decisions in the trials. It's the jury. Who are the jury?
The people, like us.
Which people?
People that get summoned. They get it in the mail and then they have to go.
Exactly. Any person, except for me, can be expected to serve on a jury.
You can't ask us, you can't expect us to ask why I'm not you.
I can, you can.
Oh, but why'd you say not me?
I cannot sit on a jury.
He's a lawyer.
Well, I could sit on a lawyer, but the moment I have to identify myself, there's going to be no attorney that wants me on the jury pool.
Why? He's going to be strict.
He's too smart.
I could contaminate the jury. I could convince the jury, based on my expertise, to vote the way that I would want them to.
That's so true.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
You think that's fair?
No, I mean, like, it's fair that you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah, so it would be unfair.
It would be unfair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but it's just because I'm knowledgeable.
Have you ever had a mistrial?
Me?
Yeah, in one of your cases?
No, I've always won.
Oh, okay.
I have a 100% track record.
Do you actually?
I do.
So if I go to court, can I, like, bring you up as my judge?
No. No, I'm not a judge.
Sorry, you know what I meant. My attorney.
No, I would have to say no. Because we have this student-teacher relationship.
But we're dogs, man.
I'm down with that, but I'm just saying, I can't. Ethical reasons. Ethics always trump everything. All right, so jury. Just everyday average people. Registered to vote could be summoned and serve on a jury. And they are known as the trier of facts. So they sit back and they listen to what is going on. And once the judge presents them the law, they have to determine either, if it's a civil case, whether the defendant is liable, meaning they have to pay. Or if it's a criminal case, they have to determine if the party is guilty or not. So if they didn't do the civil claim, then the defendant's not liable. Case closed. If it's a criminal case, and the government can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that what happened happened, then the defendant is acquitted. By the way, they are never found not guilty. That is wrong. The jury doesn't determine innocence. The jury just determines, did the government prove its case? And if they didn't prove the case, there can be no conviction. The best example I can give you, and it's getting dated because it happened before you were born. O.J. Simpson. If the glove don't fit, you must acquit. The best example of lawyering in the modern era. You take custom-made leather Isotona gloves that were soaked in the blood of Nicole Sis Simpson and her boyfriend, and I feel bad, I can't remember his name, but covered in blood. Leather gloves that were put up in little Ziploc bags and stored as evidence. Okay? Then, those were what the killer wore. Leather gloves, soaked in blood, stored in Ziplocs. OJ, before the jury, was asked to put on one of the gloves, wearing a white latex glove, so he didn't contaminate the evidence.
But it was already contaminated because they mishandled
it. Yeah, but hold on. It had nothing to do with that.
Oh.
It was the image. What happens to leather when it gets wet?
It shrinks.
Shrinks. And have you ever tried putting a leather glove on top of one of those like vinyl cooking gloves?
No, not really. It's not really something I do, Professor.
So they tried putting the shrunken leather glove over the latex glove, and guess what? The glove don't fit, you must acquit.
But didn't they know that leather shrinks?
Doesn't matter. It's the image. The people sitting in the jury box says, okay, these are the gloves that were worn by the killer, and look, he can't get it past his fingers. That ultimately, when all the jurors were interviewed, there was seven of them that acquitted OJ. And that was what they said.
And the prosecutor didn't tell him the case?
No, it was a shit show. It was bad lawyering, bad holding of the evidence by the police, media sensation. He was one of the most famous people in the country at the time.
He was one of the best running backs.
He was one of the best running backs, so he was popular from when he played with the Buffalo Bills. And at that point, he was also acting, and he was doing TV commercials for Hertz Rent-A-Car.
Yeah, he was pretty
good. Yeah, he was huge.
He died, he was huge. It kind of blew my mind.
Huh.
So could I say the evidence was tempered?
Well, that's what ended up happening. But if the evidence does not support the case, you cannot find somebody guilty.
Even
though there's no one else on earth that would have had any motivation to kill OJ's wife and her lover in the harsh manner that it was done.
Yeah, the prosecutor should have called for like a retrial.
He got out. No, that's up to the judge. They did put in for a retrial, but the judge said no. So, he literally got away with murdering his wife, in my belief. But it wasn't proven in court, because the case was mishandled.
Justice was not served.
Not for the family. But here's the irony. They sued him civilly, because if you do something, there's criminal components and there's civil components. And they won in the civil case. So he was supposed to pay the family like $12 million for wrongful death. But you know, the bastard never paid.
No, it's beyond our reach. Dude, that's what happens when you're that popular. Kind of stinks.
Yeah. That's what happens in America when you're a movie star or an athlete.
Yeah,
you can get away with murder.
Yeah, like if you're someone in Hollywood, though, exactly.
Yep, crazy.
So you think PDD's going to get away with what he's doing?
I think it depends on who wins today.
Seriously?
Yeah.
The child.
Aside
who wins, I don't think he's going to get away with it.
I think he will get away with it, depending upon who wins today.
Who's getting away with it?
Yeah.
P. Diddy.
What?
What?
Nah.
Oh, yep. You see, no, he can get away. What?
There's so much.
So much evidence. Much people coming up.
So many people connected to which candidate?
Donald Trump. Hey, did he's connected to like the candidates?
All of the friends, all of the wealthy benefactors.
Oh, Kamala Harris? Hasn't it been confirmed that he's also connected to Donald Trump? Like, stuff just released about that.
Not that I know of. Nothing that's been verified. There's been a couple of accusations, but nothing was substantiated.
Yeah, because there is what?
Jennifer Lopez.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Some of the other Hollywood actors that got in and endorsed. Yeah. It's going to be like the other list.
No, I was thinking of Epstein. My bad.
Oh, yeah, Epstein.
I was thinking of Epstein and Trump. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, Epstein actually got kicked out of Mar-a-Lago when Trump found out what he was doing. Thought he was a dirtbag, kicked him out. But you know who was Epstein's buddy?
Bill Clinton.
That portrait that he had Bill Clinton wearing like a woman's dress.
Yeah.
Why do you have that?
Huh?
Why do you have that?
Because they are sick, maniacal people. All right, anyways, well, we can tangent on tangent. So, in that instance, I hope so, but I think it's going to end up being political.
But my issue is, if it ends up being political, then they will not be fair to Bill Cosby.
Yeah, Bill Cosby got completely Me Too'd. He got charged at a time when the whole Me Too movement, it was a political movement, and he got caught up in it.
What was that?
Me Too? That was before the COVID. That was the trend that had happened when a bunch of women actresses in Hollywood came forward saying that how they were sexually assaulted. The producer guy.
Harvey Weinstein.
So yeah, that, well, this is the sad reality of our system. If you get to that level of wealth and status, is there justice?
No.
Well, you know what will end up happening? Some of the victims, if there are victims, will end up quietly getting paid off, and that won't get into the news. America. All right. Going back to our jury, so we know what that is. Judge, they are the trier of the law. The judges are supposed to be the presiding officer. They are not supposed to control the process. Not saying who's right, who's wrong. They are supposed to make sure that all the procedural rules are followed to make sure that the court is not biased. So, is the evidence presented? Is the evidence valid? Or should it be excluded? Is someone going in and giving hearsay testimony? Or is it valid testimony? You know, it's the job of the judge to preside over that. And it's the job of the judge to instruct the jury on the law. So that way, before they go back into the jury room and make their decision, they know what the law is. Right or wrong, that's subjective.
I mean, who decides whether the evidence is supporting what the person brought to court?
Jury. Yeah, the judge also has the power to issue what's called judgment notwithstanding the verdict. And if the jury is going completely rogue, then they can basically overturn jury's decision. There are checks and balances.
The judge can overturn it.
Yeah, judgment. It's called the losing party has to file what's known as a motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. Jane.
So, in my country, we are also adversarial.
Yep.
Colonized by British.
Oh, so yeah, you got the British. Now,
yeah,
British party.
We don't have jury.
British system is a little different, yeah.
You don't use that.
So you probably go before, is it a panel of judges?
Mm-hmm, judges, so it's a judge that decides.
Right, yeah, not in our system. Because you know why? Because England, during the pre-revolutionary years, created offices called the Admiralty Courts, mm-hmm. in which they brought over judges from England
that were making those decisions, and it upset the colonists off because the colonists had been using juries. So when we broke away, we told England to go away, we said, no, juries are enshrined in our system.
When I went to London in the summer, I actually visited England Supreme Court. The security guards actually let me sit up on the bench where all the judges preside. I didn't get to wear one of those funky wigs, though.
It would look good on you, Professor.
Yeah, I would think so. I would be a barrister if I was over in England. All right. Who can sue and who can be sued?
Pretty much anyone.
What does that mean?
Well, like if you're suing someone that's like they probably done something wrongfully or you feel like they've broken a law, I guess, and then be sued. Like, I'm pretty sure everyone in here could be sued if something happened. Like, if I hit your car, Professor, and like you knew it was me, you could sue me for that.
Could I?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you shouldn't check your car right now, but yeah.
All right. Is there any limitations on who can sue or be sued?
Well, yes, technically, yes. Because if you want to sue somebody, you're going to need a good lawyer.
Besides the point.
Yeah. Should it be that you have to have a sound mind? Like you have to be sound to bring...
You don't want to sue someone who is institutionalized because they have some type of mental disability?
Feel bad, Professor.
So if they're locked up in the rubber room and they got the straitjacket on to keep them safe, you don't think you should be able to sue them?
Well, can't you declare I'm crazy or something?
Oh, yeah, people try doing that, yeah. But, so what Susan's saying is that, so you declare yourself crazy, so the moment you do that,
no,
I can't sue you.
No.
Oh, alright. Alright, so if you are crazy, maybe I can sue you. Because what happens if you stab me?
Sucks, I guess.
I know, right? Mm. All right, what about this one? What about if I am 4 years old and I stab you? Could you sue me?
Oh, yeah, that was a big thing. Yeah. Like that 6 year old went to school.
You can sue me, but you sue me through the parents or guardians.
Oh, son,
absolutely. What about Quinsigamon Community College?
You can definitely sue.
Why? It's not a person.
You can sue an institution.
Oh, man, so you mean businesses and corporations are treated as people?
Like
what if you're dead?
Yes. You can sue.
It depends on who.
You can sue, because if they had stuff that's called an estate, and you can sue to get part of the estate. Absolutely. What about my dog, Perry?
Sue the owner.
You can sue my dog?
Yeah.
No, you can't sue my dog.
I can sue the owner, though.
You can sue me. Exactly.
Your dog, bit me, right? And, it was just off its leash in a place that's supposed to be leashed in, right?
Well, then you got to have a dog hearing.
Well, you do. You have to determine the dangerousness of the dog.
Yeah, you got to have the dangerous dog hearing, and everybody has to come sit down and say, hey, is this dog dangerous?
Well, God, it was awful.
My mom goes to him constantly.
Yeah, they come before us in my town.
Yep, they go before the select board.
Yeah. They're not fun.
Why isn't it fun?
Because I potentially have the power to kill someone's dog.
Really? They're usually about nuisance barking rather than fighting.
The ones that have come before us have been.
Really? We get a lot of nuisance.
Dog got out of house, went to neighbor's yard, bit neighbor on the ass.
We've had that over the fence across the street.
I didn't know it was like a kill thing.
You can kill them.
You could have them taken away. We can require that they're locked up all the time. There's a whole bunch of things that we can do. Yeah.
It's so sad.
Yeah, crazy. And what happened to that poor squirrel in New York?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
You can send the police in and take the squirrel and kill it.
What? What did the squirrel do?
What?
He had fame on the internet, apparently.
Jumping on people?
All right. So we understand that there definitely has to be a human component at some point.
It wasn't owned legally or something.
Someone owned squirrel?
It was a wildlife rehabilitation thing that he didn't have the paperwork for, I think.
So imagine that. The government can control what you have for a pet.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, some people like put like shiny things on their like windowsills so like crows will go and like take them and like bring more stuff.
Yeah, but that's not owning it as a pet. It's different than keeping it in your house versus having it direct from someone else.
So the government still went into the guy's house, took the pet, and killed it.
And the rest. How
did they shoot it? Couldn't they just like let it go?
It bit an officer, and
the squirrel bit someone.
The officer that came in, and they said we have to test it for rabies, even though there wasn't really probable cause for rabies. Because he owned it for like 7 years, but I read somewhere, I don't know if this is true or not, I literally read it like as I was scrolling by this morning, that he didn't have the squirrel vaccinated for rabies. But then again, where are you going to get it vaccinated? Because you technically own this animal illegally. Like when you try to bring an invasive species to a wildlife rehabilitator, like a house sparrow or something, and they basically turn you away and say, we can't do that because it's an invasive species, you got to go put that back. That's how a lot of people end up with pet sparrows or pet starlings, European starlings, because they're invasive and wildlife rehabilitations generally won't take them. But.
So anyways, at the end of the day, yes, the government can determine what you can own for a pet.
Died, man.
Yeah. All right.
And a raccoon. They get raccoons.
Yeah, my buddy had a possum in his backyard for like a week.
It's different, though. They were in his house. Like, he was keeping these in the house. They didn't go anywhere. So, again, rabies.
All right. So. I've already done the plaintiff and the defendant. Of course, this is civil. As I told you, if it's criminal, it's the state versus the defendant. That may came up somewhere. I'm not quite sure.
Now, here's the catch. In order to sue, you have to be a human being. But in order to have a trial, there are 5 steps you must overcome. Because in order to get into the courtroom, you have to have sufficient evidence that the case is just. First aspect, you have to have what's called standing. You need to have standing to sue, meaning you are the party that was harmed by the named defendant. So in order to sue me, I had to do something to you that resulted in harm.
Questions on standing.
Okay.
Second, the court must be able to do something about it. Meaning the issue is justiciable. The court must be able to provide some type of remedy. So, if I take a rock and I smash the window of your car, the remedy would be the cost of repair. The court can do something about it. But you know what the court can't do? If I said something that hurt your feelings and you cried.
It made you sad. Isn't that suing for emotional damages?
Yeah, good luck proving that. You have to go clinical. You have to be able to prove that you basically go to a clinic. You suffer severe emotional
distress. Oh, psychological
distress.
Damages.
Yes.
Yes.
Hurting your feelings? Court doesn't have the power to give you a tissue. So the harm must be real.
It must be significant. And that's the next issue. It has to be ripe. Yes?
So the first time to sue, so could you say, like, can I say that the victim, the party that was harmed?
Keep it with this. The plaintiff was harmed by the defendant.
Oh, okay. So it will be the plaintiff.
The plaintiff is the person who is bringing the claim. The plaintiff. All right. So in order to sue, you, the plaintiff, has to be the person that was harmed by the defendant. If you sue me because your car window is broken, but it was Phil who did it, do you have standing for that claim? Mm-hmm. No, because I didn't do it. You have to be able to have at least some evidence to show that I did it.
The court must be able to do something about it. And the issue has to be ripe. It has to be fresh. It must be real. It can't be theoretical.
Is your statute of limitations coming
on? Yes. No, that's the next one. All right, so.
Explain it further.
All right, so here you go. Here's an issue of ripeness. I threaten to punch you, okay? And I walk over and I take a swing. Is that a real potential situation?
Yes.
Or is it hypothetical?
Well,
I actually went over and took a swing. You did something.
So I said I was going to do it.
Right.
You knew it was coming, and I took some type of action to do it. That would be a ripe situation. But you know what would not be a ripe situation?
Just saying it.
Susan, I'm going to fine you 47 years from now, and I'm going to punch you.
Insane.
Wow.
What a monster.
Wow.
How dare you?
I know, but why is that not ripe?
You got to wait till whatever day happens. You got to make sure you get there.
Yeah, what could happen between now and 47 years from now?
You could die.
Well, chances are I'm going to be dead because I don't think I'm going to live to be over 100.
You've got 47 years to prepare for that moment.
So, it can't be theoretical. It can't be hypothetical. It must have either happened or could actually happen. Okay? The end of that is mootness.
What the hell?
It expired.
It's moot.
It's moot. It's no longer present. All right. The example that I always give is pregnancy. A woman is pregnant up to the moment when out it comes. The moment it comes out, can she be pregnant with that pregnancy again? It's done. It's over. It's expired. It could never even be again. Because if a woman gets pregnant again, it's a different pregnancy. The most common application of mootness is statute of limitations.
That's what I was wondering.
The law establishes the amount of time you have to file a claim. And if you get one day beyond, you have no claim. Yes?
So how would you explain, because I know that they are able to go back as a retrospective or something.
Only if the statute changes. You can't go retroactively back in time if there is a statute of limitations. So, again, this is one of the things, and I don't like it. This is one of the bad things that happened during the Me Too era. States, in order to give women claim, started eliminating statute of limitations. So the example that I've been giving is what happened to Associate Justice of the Supreme Court Roberts, when he basically had his place on the Supreme Court almost destroyed by some woman who came forward and claimed back when they were teenagers, they went to some party and he sexually assaulted her. Even though she could not say where exactly it happened, when it happened, or who was there. That's not a good thing. The reason why claims have statute of limitations is things happen the longer you wait. Evidence gets lost. Memories change. I can tell you, back when I was a kid, I remember back when I used to play baseball, and I was the second coming of freaking Babe Ruth in my mind. So if I'm going to tell you a story, it's going to be how awesome I was. Even though, truth be told, I either struck out or I hit home runs. And I didn't hit many home runs because all I could do was swing as high as I could. And I shut my eyes when I swung. But again, my memory of those situations is, I'm Godzilla. Well, you cannot get justice if you're relying upon human beings' memories to be accurate 5, 10, 20 years down the road. So in our system, we made a decision. Look, if something happens to you, you go to court immediately while it's still fresh.
You usually hear like a lot of things where you were talking about with like rape or assault and stuff like that. People will wait like 5, 10, like 20 years to like come out and talk about it, right? Because, like, you know, it's like...
But that's fine if they're going to come out and talk about it, because maybe they're embarrassed, they're humiliated, or whatever the reason. But the problem is in most states, you wait that long, you have no claim.
Yeah.
But then they try and bring someone to court about it.
Well, a lot of, like I said, it happened when Me Too was going on. So this was 2015, 2016, 17. States started changing the laws. So there was the woman who sued Trump claiming that he touched her inappropriately in a dressing room in a department store back in the 1990s. Well, Trump said no, so she sued for defamation, claiming that Trump was lying about her. And when it got into trial, the judge did not allow Donald Trump to refute the alleged sexual assault. He was not allowed to defend himself because New York changed the laws to allow that type of claim to come in.
So can you just countersue for defamation?
You can't countersue for defamation.
Okay, why not?
Because he was a national celebrity. And in order to sue for defamation, if you're a celebrity, you have to prove actual intentional malice. And of course, the defense to any defamation claim is just my opinion.
So what would normally be the limitation here?
Depends. Three, five, seven. Most criminal harm, it's usually about seven. Like fender benders, it's like three. So again, and not meaning to be redundant, but if something happens to you, get a lawyer, you start moving forward. Because if you wait too long, it's going to become moot. Oh, perfect timing. We got a couple minutes left, but we're at the last thing I wanted to give you anyways, because it's the fifth basic requirement to get into court. You have to sue in the right court. Venue.
Small claims versus...
Exactly. General court. Every single court has a jurisdiction. There's an area of subject matter that they have authority over. And if you try filing a claim in the wrong court, you don't have an opportunity to go to court because your claim will be rejected. And if you're dealing with statute of limitation circumstances, you could be denied justice. So, for instance, if you get into a car accident, you don't want to have your attorney go to probate court and file a claim. Probate deals with wills and trusts. It has nothing to do with motor vehicle accidents. If you're just doing a small fender bender, that would be the district court. But if you're suing because you were paralyzed, you lost your ability to work, then if you file in district court, improper venue, you would have to go to the superior court. So, you only have your case if you apply for a claim in the right venue. We'll get more specific next class. Any last minute questions? Yes, Sue.
So with venue, how, like you explained it, and I'll listen to the audio again. But what would jurisdiction be?
Jurisdiction, the subject matter authority. So what can the court control? What types of cases can they hear? Bill?
I was waving.
Oh, bye. Hey, if you haven't voted, go get your sticker.
Have a good day.
See you later.